The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, number 2 to the 7th for Monday, November 19th, 2007.
Folks, and welcome to take three of the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab for this week. I'm Dave Hamilton. I'm here with John Braun. John, you know, whenever we flub things and actually restart the recording, it never, ever works on the second try. By the way, hi, John. How are you?
So it's like take 2.5 because, yeah, I flubbed the second.
Yeah. You know, most of the time, I would say probably 95% of the time, we hit record and that's it. We never turn back. If, however, there's something early on, what happened tonight was something we've seen before. It's a mistake I shouldn't make, but I recorded the wrong stream in Audio Hijack and realized it about 5 minutes in. So then we started again, and then, of course, there was a flub. I don't believe any show has ever been take two. Most are take one. We have quite a few take threes, but I don't think there are any take twos. So there you go. We do have a lot of stuff to talk about in this show. We've got some Leopard fixes to talk about, Outlook to Mac migration tools and utilities, some follow-up from you folks on that, little bit about email encryption and all sorts of stuff. But first, John, I wanted to tell you, last night I did the Typical Mac User podcast with Victor Cahiao, and it was awesome. He does it with TalkShoe, right? So it allows people to interact live. They can hear the show while we're recording it, and there's a chat room that's kind of got this weird, funky, backwards scrolling interface, but it works once you kind of grok it, and then of course people can call in live and ask questions, and it was a blast. I won't rehash what we did because of course you can all go listen to it, but about halfway through the show I decided, John, you and I totally have to do this at some point, either with Victor on his show, or maybe we'll have Victor help us do one for us. Or I think we'd have a real blast. So expect that soon.
I'm game, but I have a short attention span. So all those things happening at once may be overwhelming.
It totally was. I actually haven't listened back to last night's show, but unless Victor did some really masterful editing, there were a couple of moments where I just went into la la land. Because I just had too much coming in, and he'd ask me a question. He'd be like, "Dave, did I lose you?" Like, "Well, no, I'm actually here."
So. Yeah, because the kids of today can handle texting while they're driving and shaving
can't.
And reading the paper. Well, no, they don't
crash their cars.
Well, yeah, but they got these big honking SUVs, so they don't have to worry about hurting themselves, just others. Okay, enough social commentary. Let's where are we going here?
You can send your own commentary, preferably Mac related, but feel free to send anything you like to us at feedback@macgeekgab.com. Of course, you can Skype it to Mac Geek Gab, and then John, the phone number for them to dial in and leave us a voicemail is
206-666-GEEK, which is Dave
4335. And with that, we'll get on to Adam's question. Adam writes, "Recently, my Finder's been locking up. It does so sporadically and under different circumstances. I can't directly recreate the exact conditions of the lockup, but I'll be doing something in any given app, and the Mac has been running for anywhere from 5 minutes to an hour, and all of a sudden, the spinning beach ball of death does its endless spinny thing. Force quitting and relaunching the Finder just sends a blue screen and hangs again. A reboot is necessary. Once rebooted, however, one of my external FireWire drives will not mount. I have to power cycle it for it to mount again. This led me to believe it could be the root of the issue. I ran TechTool Pro 4 on the system, and all the drives checked out fine, except when I checked the external FireWire drive, it mentioned that it had bad blocks. I haven't tried to fix anything yet in TechTool Pro, because it seems pointless if things keep locking up. To try and confirm that the drive was at fault, I unmounted the drive from the system and tried to recreate the scenario. Even without the drive attached, the Finder's still locked up. Not the drive alone, then. I reformatted the drive and did a clean OS install. And though I went through that process, came back up, everything was fine. Until I plugged in the FireWire drive. At that point, once I tried to write a file to it, the system locked up again. So my question is, could it be a bad FireWire cable or perhaps the onboard controller?" All right. So, John, I'll let you take this one.
Okay. I'm going to start off by saying, number one, it sounds like this drive is having a rough time and it's on its way out. So just a bad block thing. I mean, a drive should never report bad blocks. If it does, I mean, most of them, the newer ones are able to kind of deal with minor bad blocks. So if you're getting the drive explicitly reporting that, it's in trouble. So do whatever you need to do. Copy the entire drive. Use Carbon Copy Cloner or you know, any of a number of utilities, or just make an archive. But get stuff off of there now, because it sounds bad. One thing I would check is the console. You're stating that things are locking up. Sometimes the consoles report what is going on. My guess, though, and this has been my observation about hardware, not just on the Mac, but in general, is that if hardware does something that the OS or driver does not expect, like freaking out because there's bad blocks, then a lot of software, from what I've seen, does not deal with it very elegantly. In other words, the computer locks up and nothing happens, because the software will say, hey, you know, hard drive, can you give me some info? And it's like, yeah, okay, hold on, I'll be right back, and it never comes back, and the software is kind of clueless. Now, you can try to, you know, force quit things, but that gets you into a state which you'd rather not be in. So that's my initial thought on this, is, you know, try the console, but this drive is on its way out. Maybe you can try it with, maybe you can talk about a few of these, Dave, but, yeah, you know, there are external, or there are other ways to access the drive, and that's the direction maybe you want to pick it up on.
Yeah, Disk Utility has its smart checker, and there's other ones out there, smart being the self-monitoring analysis and reporting technology, but as we mentioned, many times the external FireWire cases and the chipsets in them don't support smart communication back and forth. So you really won't know if the drive's reporting that it's got this issue. And I agree with what you said. Back up the data and get rid of the drive. I always would liken bad blocks on a hard drive to like cancer cells. They typically don't get the amount of them typically does not go down. They tend to grow. It usually means there's a physical defect with the drive, and it's just going to keep on going from there. So drives tend to come out of the factory with a couple of bad blocks. Usually that's normal and within tolerance, but you don't even see them because they're blocked out from the get-go. If more start developing and like you found with Tech Tool Pro, starts reporting on them, it's time to you know, cut bait at that point and put a new drive in. The good news is you've got this external case. The case is probably fine. The cable's probably fine. Bad blocks aren't created by bad cables or bad cases. Well, they may be created by them, but they certainly aren't misreported by them. And I think you'd be fine just, you know, putting a new drive in the case and moving on with life.
Yeah, I think to wrap it up, it's unlikely. I mean, it sounds like the drive's on the way out, but it could be the power supply or the enclosure or the cable. So in that case, there's something, and actually we just put a piece up today, Dave. I think Weebitech has a, and also Newer are two companies that make devices that let you, on the quick, you know, they're not enclosures or cases. They're like bare cables. So these are, you know, for use only in emergency, but they let you hook up to a bare drive.
Yep.
Which would help rule out a problem with the cable, another cable, or a case or a chipset or something like that. We'll link to those. And I've used them on occasion, and they're very helpful, because sometimes you do get, I mean, I've run into cases where the power supply was bad or something, and all sorts of weird things happen. But it doesn't sound very likely based on all the other things that were tried.
Yeah, I agree. All right, moving on to... let's find Fred's email here, and I'm still fighting with Yojimbo not syncing and that whole thing. So I'm reading old school right from paper here. Fred writes, I have three Macs on my home network. The oldest is Fred's iMac, next is Fred's Mac Mini, then Fred's MacBook. I'd like to have the same username on all machines. Will that cause a problem with permissions or file sharing? I'll be upgrading to Leopard before the end of the year, and I wanted to make sure to get this right. Dave, I know that you have multiple machines. How do you keep your usernames and machines defined? I'm always a couple of weeks behind on the podcast, so maybe you've already discussed back to my Mac. What role will that play? All right. First question, usernames on the machines. I have, in fact, three machines. I've got the one up here in the studio, the one in the office, and then an iMac at the house. And on all three, I have exactly the same username. Be long username, which of course for me is Dave Hamilton, and short username, which for me is Dave. That actually makes things very, very easy when I'm moving, syncing up keychains and all of that good stuff. It actually works out very, very well. I would not name the machines the same for what I hope are obvious reasons, but if not, you know, we can talk a little bit about that. But yeah, don't name the machines the same. As far as
I think,
go ahead. Yeah, we'll talk about back to my Mac. But go ahead, John. Yeah.
Okay. No, I think the long end thing. So number one, I think it actually works to your benefit because a lot of times, when you try to log into a remote computer, by default, a lot of times it'll fill in the username of the current user, so it actually speed things up.
Right.
Rather than you making, you know, small variations to the username. So I do the same thing that you do. So I guess, yes, that is a that's a good thing to do.
It is. All right. So back to my Mac. I went down to Connecticut last week. I think so. Middle of last week. Yeah, middle of last week. Went down to Mohegan Sun and saw Stevie Wonder. Fantastic show. If you have an opportunity, go see Stevie. It blew me away. One of the best concerts I've ever seen in my life. Anyway. After the show, stayed in this great little hotel, cheap, but had free Wi-Fi. And so I thought, oh, you know, I remember I enabled back to my Mac on the iMac. Now, you know, I've got a router here that you know, distributes everything for the network for the house and the office. And then, of course, they were on, you know, some sort of NAT router at the hotel. And all I did was go to the Finder. In the shared list, my iMac appeared because, of course, it was enabled for back to my Mac, just like it would appear on my local network here. I clicked on it. I clicked share screen. Up came the login thing. I typed in my password and boom, it just plain worked. Now, I know a lot of this has to do with the way routers deal with UPnP. And I can never remember the thing that Apple uses, L, whatever it is. But anyway, UPnP. And the thing that Apple uses, essentially both being ways of letting computers program the router to say, look, when a connection comes in on this port, send it to me. And of course, that seemed to work just fine. It worked really, really well. Related to that, I got a buddy for whom I installed Leopard, helped him install Leopard on Thursday. On Friday, he was having some not really a problem, but had some questions. So we got on iChat. And I right clicked on his username and said, request to share this person's screen. And again, it worked perfectly. We had audio chat going back and forth between us. And I was able to control his screen. He could see what was going on. Absolutely fantastic. Really, really excellent features in Leopard. And for me, they worked really, really well. I know for some people, they haven't been. And I think it's all related to the router and the UPnP. Along those lines, I know I said this last night on Victor's show, but if you have any problems, I've found that the UPnP daemon in Linksys routers tends to get itself locked up after about 20 days. It's not always right at 20 days. I've had them go 60 days and they're fine, but usually up to, you know, the first couple, 3 weeks, it's fine. After that, it tends to get flaky and maybe not accept UPnP requests. So unplugging power from the router for 30 seconds, plug it back in, let it start back up and sync back up. And that should help keep that stuff going.
Ah, now one thing, the oddity you were talking about before, I believe is NAT-PMP.
Thank you.
Is the less popular protocol that Apple apparently, it looks to me, did submit as a proposed protocol, but nobody's really jumping on their bandwagon. I think if you have an airport base station, that this will be an option for doing things that almost everybody uses another protocol for. So,
yeah, you know, Apple's gotten a lot better about the whole standards thing, but
absolutely.
But you know, they got to leave something right to have as their own proprietary thing and make software vendors like the poor folks at Audio Hijack. I think with Nicecast, they had to go and write both UPnP and NAT-PNP drivers so that they could do, you know, everything regardless of what kind of route.
You and I remember the bad. Oh man, I mean, you know, Apple always had the superior but less popular, so Nubus and SCSI and Apple Talk and all that stuff. Which,
yeah,
you know, now you can pretty much, as I've done recently, like when I got this terabyte drive, it's like I don't have to worry that it's for a Mac; it doesn't care,
right? All right, so Dave, not me, but Dave writes, having an odd issue when logging in with Leopard. Upon login, two applications start running and place identical puzzle piece icons into the dock. The two applications are Check Plugins and Clean Cache. Now, that's Check Plugins with a capital C and P and a Clean Cache with C and C, but they are each one word. Often, they seem to hang up the system at login until they complete running. They disappear and close after about 30 to 45 seconds. Sometimes the menu bar does not appear until Check Plugins is done, although oddly, these icons in the menu bar still appear. Both programs also appear consistently when waking the laptop up from sleep. The Check Plugin app has started running a few times at the login screen even before I log in. I can't find any evidence of what either program does online. However, I do see that the Check Plugin app, whatever it does, is in my users shared / Check Plugins folder. Can't find any reference to Clean Cache on my drive. I'd like to stop running before and after login since they seem to do nothing except hang the system. What do I do? For the record, I don't have a Check Plugins folder in my users shared folder. Do you, John?
No. I looked on my machine and I didn't have anything resembling this.
Okay. Now, the interesting thing is further on down, he talks about that he installed Leopard using the erase and install option and then migrated his user account back from the carbon copy cloner disk that he made using Migration Assistant. So something in Migration Assistant is grabbing this, whatever this was, from his old system. Now, John, you did some searching and you might have an answer here, but we'll see what you have.
Yeah, no, a little search. And the only two apps I came up with potentially that have something to do with this is OmniPage had a, now I'm not sure because you referred to Check Plugin and Check Plugins,
right,
both names in the email, but OmniPage, which is something that was tossed on some Macs, I believe for free or as a demo maybe there. And then I also saw another reference to something that was called Check Plugin, like with CanoScan. And we've run into this before. I came up with this actually on a German board, so I couldn't read a lot of it. But CanoScan is an application. I have run into this in the past. It drives a Canon scanner. And sometimes some of these scanner and printer drivers, as Dave and I have discovered, or through the listeners, is that some of them get very cranky when the device they want to talk to is not there. So this could be causing that sort of grief.
Yep. If anyone has any more information about it here, I'd love to. We're happy to help, and I think this would be an interesting conversation to have over the next couple of weeks about things that are being pulled over from the Migration Assistant that may not be compatible with your Leopard machine. So it sounds,
yeah, what I'd recommend, did I mention a dog pile?
For a search engine.
Yes. So I tried with, and though Google, I would say, is one of the better.
Yeah.
Search engines. Dogpile is kind of interesting because they take their query and they toss it out to a number of engines, some which, you know, like in this case, I found something that was foreign language. Of course, I can get it translated, but Dogpile is kind of interesting. I think they're still in the running. You know, they don't get the big press that Google or other people do, but sometimes for things like this, you may want to go beyond Google or the Apple support boards to see if there's anything out there.
All right, there you go. Our first sponsor for this show is Audible at audible.com. If you visit audible.com/MacGeekGab, you'll get one free download of an audiobook in addition to a 14-day free trial of Audible Listener Gold. Audible has audiobooks in all genres, shapes, sizes, forms. Well, not forms, they're all audio. Almost 40,000 titles to choose from. Some Mac-specific or Apple-specific books, Icon Steve Jobs, The Greatest Second Act in the History of Business, Alan Deutschman's The Second Coming of Steve Jobs, the IWAS book, How I Invented the Personal Computer and Had Fun Along the Way, all kinds of stuff there. I encourage you to go check it out. It's at audible.com/MacGeekGab, and that's the link that will get you the one free download, and you can check it out for free and decide if you like it, and then either keep going or stop. So audible.com/MacGeekGab. And with that, we'll move on to Dee Dee with an interesting question. Two questions.
Hey, guys. I'm a first-time caller. I've been listening for a while. In fact, ever since I switched from the PC. It's been about 6 months, I guess. This is Dee Dee Warren from Florida. And I have a couple problems I was hoping you could help me with. I just upgraded to Leopard, and I did the upgrade option, which I'm beginning to think is the source of all of my woes. I have a Mac Pro, and what's going on is not every time, but intermittently when I shut down the computer, the screen and all the programs and everything shut down, but the Mac Pro itself, the light never goes off. You don't hear a fan running or anything, but the machine just never completely shuts down. I ran into one other person who had the same problem, also did an upgrade for Leopard, so I'm wondering if that's it, if there's something else I can do. The second problem has also started happening after the upgrade, is on my keyboard, the close parenthesis key, which is a shift, you know, right above the zero, it just doesn't work. The zero worked, but that other key just doesn't work. So it's a Kensington Studio Board Pro, and I'm just hoping you can give me some clues, point me in the right direction. I'm trying to learn. I know this is where you're
That is where I'm going to cut you off. All right, John, let's talk about this this first thing, first thing first. So Leopard's not wanting to shut down. Now, at the tail end of the shutdown process, we've talked about how there's some cache cleaning that goes on there. And then, like Tiger, it also at that point begins pulling the last little bits out of virtual memory and flushing the virtual memory files before it reboots. So, you know, my gut says grab a utility like Onyx or Cocktail. Cocktail 4.0 is Leopard compatible. Onyx has, I think it's 1.8 point something beta that's Leopard compatible. Run those, clean your caches, and use them to delete your virtual memory files. That'll force the OS to recreate them, and that may free some of that up. That's kind of my thought on that, John. What do you got?
Yeah, I wouldn't get all fancy pants like you. I'd probably check some basic things like permissions, because yeah, there could be something that's trying to write something or read something, probably write something or clear something. And if permissions are messed up, then it may just sit there forever saying, you know, hello, hello, hello. And
yeah.
The other thing would be our friend, the console. Always check the console after something like this happens. There may be, you know, a poor, you know, process that, you know, let out a final debug line in the console saying, here's why I'm upset and I'm not going to let you shut down. So those would be my two basic ones that, you know, I'll mention them again. They're always good basic tools for figuring out system problems here, your permissions and your looking in the console. Though some are very obscure, I'll admit, every now and then you may stumble across something, especially with the search feature to match your woes. So that's what I got to say about the first part of this.
All right, I got one more thing that I thought of while you were talking about the console. Mm-hmm. Do you have any other drives mounted on the system? Because, of course, the very last thing that happens is it unmounts the drives and then reboots, right? So if you've got, say, a FireWire drive or maybe even another internal drive, and there's something about that drive that's either not right or, you know, who knows, if you've got some files on there that, again, maybe permissions or, you know, damaged files, that might do it.
And I'm going to add to what you just said.
Right. One-upmanship.
Well, I found this, but I think it was a past show. But sometimes if network drives may not unmount properly, so
yes,
perhaps you would like to manually kick the network drives off of the computer before you try to restart. Because sometimes if the network drive is in a weird state or you know, it has a problem, then your computer may never shut down because it's eternally waiting for the network drive to shut down, and it's not for whatever reason. So
bingo.
Just want to toss that in.
Yeah, in fact, I think 10.5.1, among other things, does some fixes for network issues and strangeness that aren't dissimilar to what she's describing.
We saw one thing, especially, I'm sorry, somebody did write in about this, but they were having problems writing to an SMB volume, which is the Windows server message block, I think it stands for. Yeah. But anyways, one of the Windows networking protocols, 10.5.1, I think, fixes a problem where you could not write. So,
right.
Yes, network drives can cause you issues. So yeah, Kick them off your computer before you restart or shut. Well, shutdown is pretty much final, but
yeah. All right. This won't be the last, but this will be the second question. Oh, thank you, John.
Well, the keyboard,
yeah,
right?
Go ahead. Yeah, go. Yeah.
Well, you know, I was guessing here. So I think she was saying that she had a problem with shift zero would do a right paren. Was that correct?
Correct.
I think so. My only reflection is that whenever I've had my keyboard not do things that I want. So, well, the first thing I'm thinking of is she mentioned it was a Kensington, and they do have MouseWorks and other third-party software. So make sure the drivers are up to date. There could be, with the application, I mean, usually I will neglect to use the Kensington stuff just because more often than not it introduces more problems than it solves. And that's just my opinion, but you know, the way the devices usually interface with the computer is good enough without their driver to do, you know, some additional stuff that I don't care about. But so it could be the driver, but I've found something sometimes when I'm using a special PowerBook is your NumLock key may be on, especially if things are happening in the area that's shared mapping between NumLock and your regular keyboard. Now, I don't know how the Kensington keyboard is mapped, but just a kind of a far-out thought, maybe not for this case, but for people in the future, if your keyboard does weird things and you don't know why, check your NumLock, especially, again, on the portable. Sometimes the light that indicates NumLock is down does not light up, and the keys that are mapped for three or four purposes sometimes may do things that you don't want. So that's what I got on that.
I got nothing to add to that. That's pretty much spot on there. Nicely done. I don't think this will be his last comment this show, but it's certainly his first and begs a good question.
What's a silver and a platinum pass for Macworld?
Yeah, good question. That's Robert Hazelrig there.
Right to the point.
Right to the point. We don't mess around here. So he's referring to the contest that we're running here at the Mac Observer and, of course, on the podcast here at the Geek Gab, where you can win either a platinum pass or a super pass. We're giving away one of each. And these passes, the platinum pass essentially gets you into everything at the show. So you get one Series 1 Power Tools Conference, one Series 2 Power Tools Conference, the Mac IT Conference, the Users Conference. You get to go to a market symposium. You get to go to the Mac Lab, priority seating access for the keynote. You get to, of course, get to go to all the feature presentations. They provide you lunch for 5 days. You get complete downloads of all the sessions from Macworld CNE Encore. And, of course, you know, you get access to the exhibit halls, as you might expect. The Super Pass is not quite what the Platinum Pass offers, but you get a Series 1 Power Tools Conference, Mac IT, Users Conference, Market Symposium, still get the priority seating for the keynote, still get the feature presentations, you still get into the exhibit hall, and free lunch, 5 days. So, well worth entering the contest if you're heading to Macworld. We are doing the drawing, I believe, I don't think it's next week, right? What's the date today? No, not next week. We're doing the drawing December 4th. Right before I go off on vacation, and we'll announce the winners then. So yeah, go ahead and enter that, and we'd love to see it at Macworld. Speaking of Macworld, the hotel rooms that we have on discount for you folks at the Milano are almost gone. They may be gone. If you went today, you would see that they were gone. That was because We screwed up. We sold you guys so many rooms that there's actually not enough room there for all of the TMO staff to stay there. But that's okay. We released some of the rooms that we had on hold for our staff so that you folks could get your room discounts and we'll find somewhere else to stay. I think
there certainly hopes.
Yeah, no. We'll be there. I'm not sure if the Milano will have rooms for us. Like I said, this was way more popular than we thought, which is fantastic. Thank you very much. It was a successful promotion. If you go there, I believe starting Tuesday morning, everything, the remaining rooms that we let back open should be available. If by Tuesday night, Wednesday night, you're there and it's still not showing up, you have missed the opportunity. Those rooms are gone. But you know, at that point, I guess I'll point you to one of our sponsors, harman-etravel.com, and you can hunt for hotel rooms there. They've actually got some good deals, I think, out in San Francisco even still. So That's another option. So if you want those rooms, go and get them. If you want to email me just to confirm whether or not they are gone, I'm happy to do that. We'll also post it to the, if you go on the TMO and look over on the right side, there's a link that says Macworld Expo 2008 hotel discount. That will indicate once those rooms are gone too. So that's that. We have a question from John, but I don't think it's from you, John. I think it's a different John. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm sure it is because this John's in Canada. John writes, I like to take extended holidays of 4 to 6 weeks when possible, and my wife and I enjoy traveling to Mexico and Southeast Asia. We like to travel light and backpack it around using local buses, trains, etc. I have no desire to haul a laptop around with me, but I would like to take my iPod with me to listen to the occasional podcast and or some music. Internet cafes are plentiful and cheap to use in most places we get to. Is it possible to update my iPod's podcasts manually? I use a Mac, but virtually all internet cafes are strictly Windows PCs, so I'm guessing I would have to reformat the iPod to Windows before doing anything at all. I love my iPod, but I hate the fact that I must use iTunes to update it all the time. I was hoping the new iTouch would accomplish wireless updates of podcasts, but unfortunately, the wireless connectivity only applies to content for purchase. Any suggestions? Maybe I need to look at an alternative drag-and-drop MP3 player. All right, so John and I took some time before we screwed up the intro to the show twice here and dug around. And one thing that we found was there is a folder on the iPod called iPod_control. And in that folder is everything, all of your music. And now this is, I mounted the iPod as a FireWire disc. When you do that, that folder simply won't appear. But if you go into the terminal and change directory, /volumes/ a name of your iPod, there's a folder there called iPod_control. Maybe it's iTunes_control. In any event, only one of them. That's what it is. In there's a folder called music. And in the folder called music on the one I have here, there were 50 folders, F00 through F49. Going into any one of those folders showed all of my MP3s. However, they were all named 4-character file names .mp3. So clearly file names are being changed. There is some index there that's happening, obviously something that holds all the playlists. I don't think there's any way to manage that data other than with iTunes. But I bet one of you knows, and you're going to tell us. So that's but for now,
To get things off, and you and I found numerous programs that, or just like you did, you find the invisible directory,
right,
and you pull stuff off, but it may not be entirely usable. And maybe that's intentional. Yeah, of course it is.
Actually, I've pulled things off of iPods very successfully. In fact, I've seen apps that'll pull stuff off of iPods into playlists and rebuild a library from it.
With CDDB and stuff like that. Yeah, you can.
No. iPod.iTunes will actually read the playlists and everything and rebuild your entire library. From that, I've done that successfully. So, and that's a pretty cool little utility. But I've seen nothing that goes the other way around.
Yeah, putting stuff on there that looks pretty rough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
Tim.
Yeah. How are we doing on time here, John? Oh, we're actually doing really, really well. All right. Yeah, Tim. Tim writes, I do not use email encryption yet, but would like to soon. I use .Mac as my email service, and I use it in IMAP mode so that I can access it from my home-based Macs using mail.app, my work-based PCs using Thunderbird, and on the web using .Mac's webmail interface. Will all of these access methods support encrypted email messages? If so, how would one pull it off, and what's the impact to the recipients of my email messages? All right, so I think we've got a little bit of confusion here, John. Maybe not. But we'll talk about this. So there are encrypted messages, and then there's encrypted transport, or encrypting the connection that you use to check and send mail. When you go into mail.app and you enable SSL encryption, that's encrypting the connection that is sending or checking mail. So passwords and even the mail data going back and forth is encrypted so that no one sniffing around can find what they're doing. And I think that's correct. Is that right, John? The whole thing's encrypted with SSL, right?
Absolutely. So if you're using SSL or TLS, so and I guess it's important and you can continue, but this is but one aspect of a total security solution. So you certainly want to guard the traffic from your computer to, which is going to be a mail server somewhere. And that's certainly good, but that's not the entire picture of a
right.
keeping your stuff safe. So if you want to go on a bit, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah. So encrypting the email message, mail does support encrypting messages using public keys. However, you need to have, like, if I wanted to send John an encrypted message, the first thing that I need to get from him is his digital, well, it'll be his digital signature, and along with it would be packaged his public key. Once I have that in my keychain, then I can encrypt messages sent back to John. I can also digitally sign them, and then John would have everything he needs to send back an encrypted message to me. So the recipients, you can't just encrypt them. Well, mail won't easily let you just encrypt a message and blindly send it to someone. The way it works, it will only encrypt messages to people that have from whom you've previously received their public keys. That way,
right.
their public
which
key,
is called. Well, just to clarify, just to focus in on the term that you want to use here, because before you hinted at it, but a certificate is the blob of data that binds an individual to a key, and it's called a certificate. It generates a digital signature, as you said before, but I just want to be very specific that what you want to ask people for and what you may be exchanging when you send emails to one another at some point is something called a certificate. And that's something that, again, ties a name to a encryption key. And once you get it and you trust it, then what happens is down the road, if you get a communication from a person who has, you know, identified with that certificate, it'll say, oh, yes, it's from that person. So I just want to, not to get too technical, but I want to just get the terminology right, because it is important that you know the certificate is what you need. And those are also things that are a lot of times contained in the keychain, which we talked about in the past. But carry on.
No, that's good. I believe I've got this set up on my machines here. I don't use it a whole lot, but I believe I went and got trustee.com certificates for my my personal mail and was able to set that up pretty easily. There was a post over, I remember one at O'Reilly and one at Hawkwings, and I am going to try and find them and put them in the show notes here. And maybe I'll even get them before Michael creates the enhanced feed so that they're already here for you folks that are listening that way. It was an excellent tutorial, step by step, of going through what you need to do. It's not entirely obvious. It's obvious once you understand the process through which A, you obtain these certificates, and B, you integrate them. But until you've been through it, it just doesn't make sense. So I'll try and find one or both of these articles here for you, and put those in the show notes if you want to do yep. that. But yeah, they are two different things. So.
And, you know, a little commentary is that it is kind of sad to me, because I'm you know, fairly hip to the, at least the mechanisms used for securing things. And, I mean, SSL is definitely good because a lot of people don't know it's there. Now, the bad news is a lot of people don't know that it should be there.
Right.
But the same thing with the certificates is, for the most part, unless your connection to your ISP is encrypted, which this is the only thing I'd have to ding Optimum Online and Cablevision for, is that their servers do not support a secure connection. It's still POP, which is, you know, one leg of the journey, which if it's not protected is bad. Now, you know, you're not going to have your typical person hanging out on a, you know, cable network router looking for traffic, but it's still, it'd be better to have it, especially, you know, when you're logging remotely. So their speed is excellent, though. I got to say, these are probably one of the better guys in the country. I mean, yeah. I get megabyte per second download. Not megabit. No, megabyte.
Yeah. We get you. I think you'll get closer to 2 megabyte on yours. Here at Comcast with the higher speed tier, we get megabyte downloads and
oh nice
they, oh it's sweet oh yeah yeah it's great yeah all right so last week we talked about converting from Outlook on Windows to the various programs that support that on the Mac. And we have two comments here that we're just going to play for you. These folks together say it better than certainly than I could. I just don't do a whole lot of this, and I don't think you do either, John.
No.
So we're going to go ahead and play these comments and then leave you with our lasting thoughts and go from there.
Hey, John and Dave, this is Scott. One of your callers on the most recent episode there, he called in about converting stuff from Outlook onto his Mac, getting stuff from Outlook onto his Mac. And you guys talked about something that would move stuff into iCal, but I used to recommend, and I still do, a program called O2M. O2M by Little Machine. So I haven't looked that up. And basically you run that on your PC, it converts your PST. It converts them out into files that can be used on the Mac. It converts it for your mail. It converts it for your iCal stuff. It converts it for your address book. So it sets up the files for all the applications on the Mac from what was in Outlook, and it works really well. I had a short-lived Mac podcast myself with a co-host, and we recommended that. And when I switched over to the Mac for the first time in a long time from PCs, that's what I used, and it worked great. And I recently used it for my dad, so it works well. Anyway, thanks a lot, and of course the podcast is great, but I don't have to tell you that. Anyway, bye.
Hello, John and Dave. Wanted to chime in on a topic that came up in your last show about a switcher who had just switched over to the Macintosh and was having some difficulty transferring Outlook into the Mac. This is a topic that's near and dear to my own heart. I am a longtime Mac user, but I have to use the not Windows machines, but Exchange server for my business, my company. So I'm pretty familiar with how to move things back and forth. And I used to have a PC there, and I hated it. And so getting stuff off that onto my Mac. There's a lot of different translation programs out there. That SourceForge one you mentioned is one of them. And I messed with a lot of them for about 2 months. And the conclusion I came to was that most of them didn't do a very clean a job. And the best solution for this is, and it doesn't work with everybody, but if you're an Outlook user and you're on an Exchange server, you've really got the solution right there at your fingertips. We're using Entourage on the Macintosh. I prefer Entourage because I like to have my mail and my contacts and my calendar and my to-do list and my notes all in one application. That's just me. But nonetheless, you can set up Entourage to connect to an Exchange server. Typically, you enter the OWA address, which is the Outlook web address. And if you keep your contacts and your calendar items on the Exchange server, which is possible to do, and if you're not doing it now, it's very simple in Outlook to transfer them to that, they will then become available for you on the Mac. And you can either leave them on the server if you're going to keep your Exchange server, or copy them into Entourage. You can also do this with address book and mail, though I found it a bit more kludgy. And now you've got them transferred into your Macintosh. If you're not an Exchange user, but you're using Outlook on the PC, there are a fair amount of services that for, you know, $9 to $20 a month will basically give you an Exchange server. Use that for a month. Use it kind of as your transition conduit where you can put all the stuff you've got saved in the Outlook onto that Exchange server and then transfer it across to your Mac. And then if you want to go on with your regular IMAP or POP service, you can cancel that Exchange service. But that's really the best way I've found to migrate information to and from Outlook onto a Macintosh. Hope that helps that listener. Thanks.
Thank you very kindly to both of you, to Scott and to Robert. That was, again, Robert Hazelrig. Fantastic. So I think that's all we've got here, right, John? I think it's time to bring in the boys in the band.
Let the poor band in.
It's cold outside.
We got my buddy Frank up there in Waterbury. They got snow already a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, we had Connecticut.
We had some flurries the other morning. I mean, just, you know, but it had that smell in the air, you know, and it's snowing and it's just got that crisp kind of, it smells like snow. There's no other way to describe it to me.
It's like snow.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
All right, well, we got the big day coming up, you know, long weekend at Black Friday.
That's right. No, that Black Friday is good. It's a good
if
kind
you're
of
a
black.
Nutcase and you want to wait in lines for a.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, but the black part of Black Friday isn't like Doomsday Friday. It's when all the stores go
profit.
Into the blacks. Profits, you know.
Profit.
Yeah.
One would hope.
Right. Yeah.
I've long since just decided mail order is the way to go.
Oh, dude. Well, yeah.
For 90%. I mean, there's some things where you still got to, you know, have a personal touch, but.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank goodness for, you know, the carriers, UPS, FedEx, all them guys, and all the online retailers for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Allowing us just hole up and not expose ourselves to society at all.
That's what we do as geeks, right? Oh, except at Macworld Expo, we got to come out of the woodwork, right? Is that
we got to socialize? We got to talk to the listeners. I'm just kidding. I love meeting them. Oh man, especially at the party, that was so cool.
Yeah. We've got our our Cirque du Mac party. We're going to be running a contest for it's January 16th, I believe. It's that Wednesday. And we've actually got three sponsors this year. Otherworld Computing, Edemotic, and Audio Engine are sponsoring the Cirque du Mac party. We're very much looking forward to having them. It's at the Red Devil Lounge again. It is
same place?
Yeah, same place. Yep. It is invite only. We will be running a contest for to give away a couple of invites. And of course, you folks know us. So, you know, just let me know if you're going to be there and we'll see what we can do. See if we can't rig that contest. We can't rig the Macworld contest, you see, because that's, you know, that's
but getting into the to see the band. Yeah.
That's right. The Macworld All-Star Band will be playing, which includes yours.
Again? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we've been playing for a long time now. We should actually be good. No, it should be fun.
I think you are, especially with special guest, you know.
That's right. We had
vocalists and players. I mean, I've seen numerous unexpected people just hop up on stage and do their thing.
That's right. Yeah, Bud Tribble got up last year and played keys on the Beatles back in the USSR last year.
Yeah, I like Andy doing vocals. Andy always likes
maybe we'll get him
up there. Belt one out.
Yeah, Andy and Nako. I'll actually see if we can't convince him to come around. All right, so this show was converted to AAC by Michael Johnston, of course, of iPhoneAlley.com. Next week, we're here. Normal schedule, I think we're here. Normal schedule the following week, and then I am on vacation after that. So, I think so, right? The second week of December, I'm out of here. I'm disappearing. We're going on the Disney cruise. And unable to be found, so we're going to have to skip the show that week. I
got some vacation to take, to see, and then, shortly after that, there's Macworld, of course.
But it's Christmas and all those holidays and other things in the middle.
New Year's, all that stuff, and then, I got to book my flight. Who should I book my flight with?
You can book your flight through one of our podcast marketplace sponsors, harman-etravel.com. Oh. Yep.
I'm going to try it.
A5 and A2 desktop speakers also in the marketplace from Audio Engine, BB Edit from Barebone Software, one free download from audible.com as long as you use audible.com/MacGeekGab, and PDF Pen from Smile on My Mac. Can sponsor the show through the Backbeat Media Podcast Network, and we very much appreciate your subscriptions, you being subscribed to the show. Obviously, you don't pay for those. Those are free, but we appreciate that. We appreciate all you guys. It's and gals.
Gals. Oh, you just blew it, man.
I know I blew it. Yeah.
Gonna get a shaking fist.
No, I didn't. I you know. Guys,
but I've always
gals.
Wondered about. You can say guys, but you can't say gals. I mean, to me, it's
yeah. What is
the show? Guys and Dolls. Well,
I wouldn't say that.
But it was a Broadway show,
John,
right?
We're gonna quit.
Okay, we're just gonna cut our losses.
That's
here.
Right. Thanks. Thanks for listening.
Sorry, women of podcasting world.
I think I'm getting a cold. I'm kind of feeling one of those foggy head things come on. Do like we say, don't do like we do. Don't get caught.
Made up.